Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to episode number 11 of the Everything Coworking Podcast. I am excited today to introduce you to Scott Chambers, president of the Global Workspace Association and chief operating officer of Pacific Workplaces, which has 15 locations in the Bay Area. Scott has spent a long time in the industry, over 23 years, and is now providing thought leadership as business centers navigate the quickly changing landscape of shared workspace. Scott and I chat about the history of the industry and how business centers are evolving to stay relevant. On a related note, I met Scott at Juicy, the Global Coworking Unconference Conference in Austin 3 years ago, and we started chatting, had never met before. We're talking about his interest in coworking, and he had an interest in potentially co-locating a coworking space in or near one of his business centers. I happened to be moving to the Bay Area at the same time after opening my first location in Chicago. So Scott and his business partner and I partnered to open Enerspace Palo Alto not long after we met. So Scott and I have a special relationship, and I'm excited to share our chat today. We also get the scoop on the Alex Hillman Adam Tetris Roadshow that the Global Workspace Association is sponsoring, called Smash the Stereotypes on Shared Workspaces and Modern Workers. Please enjoy our conversation.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for joining me today. Ironically, you and I both live in the Bay Area, and yet we don't see each other nearly often enough. Somehow that body of water between us keeps us apart more than it should.
The San Francisco Bay acts like the pond for those between New York and Europe.
Totally. And Bay Area traffic these days. So I'm really looking forward to chatting today. Thanks for taking the time to do this.
Thank you for having me.
So we have a lot to talk about today, but I always like to help my audience get to know our guests a little bit before we dive in. So you grew up in the Bay Area, and actually we did a little pre-recording chat, and Scott was telling me he started off in Portola Valley, which is a beautiful, beautiful, almost kind of rural area on the peninsula, and then spent some time in Half Moon Bay, which is beautiful. Area right along the coast. Highway 1 passes through there, so anybody who's done that drive would have been through there and lived on a ranch for a while. So Scott and I have that in common, which we didn't know until our pre-recording chat, because he was telling me he was listening to the episode I did with Troy Evans in Syracuse, where I mentioned that I spent my childhood years on a farm. So it's good that we're doing this podcast so we can get these childhood details out.
Absolutely.
And then Scott went to high school in Palo Alto, and now he lives over in the East Bay. So Scott, you are, we talked about this in your intro, president of the Global Workspace Association, COO of Pacific Workspaces. You have 15 locations throughout the Bay Area. We're going to jump into that a little bit more, but the first couple of personal questions. I know you're a big sports fan, so tell me about your favorite teams and a favorite sporting event that you've been to in the last year or so.
Gladly. Being from the Bay Area, my whole life, I had the privilege to learn about the great game of football from the San Francisco 49ers in the 80s with some of the greatest players to ever play the game. But with that aside, my favorite passion with respect to sort of my outlet is Giants baseball. It's sort of a 6-month journey. It's somewhere a combination between, you know, statistics and a soap opera.
That's a great way to put it.
But ultimately, it's just been my outlet. It's just been a happy place. And in 2000, they built their awesome waterfront ballpark in San Francisco called AT&T Park. And I was privileged enough to be invited from Pacific Bell back in the day to attend the very first game there as a guest. And I'll certainly never forget that moment. But, you know, over the last 15 years and being a father of two teenagers, I had the privilege and the pleasure to expose them to the game. And fortunately, they embraced it. And it didn't hurt that three of the last 5 years, the Giants have won the World Championship. One of my very great memories that I will take with me forever sort of is game four. The World Series last year, we were able to get some nice tickets, and I took my wife and two kids there and watched the Giants come from a large deficit early and came back and won, and of course went on to win the World Series. And it's just memories like that that sort of complement the journey along the way. When you invest 6 months and they play every day, and you're one of those fans that kind of unfortunately actually pays attention to more of it than I probably should. Having it end in the championship parade was pretty gratifying. So,
yeah, and it has been a good few years to be a Bay Area sports fan.
No question.
And I love the way you describe baseball, the combination of statistics and soap opera. My husband's a big Mets fan, which has not been very fruitful since 1986, which is a long time ago, but he's obsessed with the numbers and the stories, and it's a long season. So
I believe is in finance, I can understand and relate to him with respect to the following of statistics. It's a numbers game, and it's just this mental dynamic that we play with ourselves on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis, and comparing these numbers to those numbers. Anyway, it's quite fun.
Good. Awesome. Well, so one other quick personal thing. So if we were to chat you up at a coffee bar at a co-working space, because we know coffee is one of the things that co-workers take very seriously, what's one thing that we wouldn't find out about you?
One thing that you wouldn't find out about me, probably the 5 years of my childhood that I actually lived out on a ranch, something you and I were talking about a little earlier today. It wasn't my happiest of times. I consider myself a fairly gregarious, people-oriented person. And my family moved from Portola Valley, which was a great little suburb in Silicon Valley, to this 360-acre ranch out on the coast that had chickens and goats and cows and horses, and lo and behold, somehow, you know, I was raised back in the era when children actually had to do chores and to earn an allowance and be responsible. And one of my chores for a summer was I had to clean the stalls from the
horses.
Yeah. And it didn't end there. I also had an assignment where I had to milk the goat from time to time.
Goats are mean.
To this day, if I go to a fine restaurant and the cheese platter has goat cheese on it, I will respectfully decline the entire platter. The simple smell of goat cheese is a complete turnoff. So,
That's so funny.
I don't go out of my way to talk about these things because it makes me look like a very negative person. But that's
really funny. It's funny that I never knew that about you, and we've known each other for a while now. We had a goat on our farm, and his name was Frisky, and he was mean.
Oh, yeah, they're very mean, and they eat everything, and they
talk to
ours. Yeah. Our goat's name was Pebbles.
Okay.
You had Frisky, and we had Pebbles. It's like very appropriate names for goats.
It's an unusual thing to have in common that we have goats growing up, so this is already a fun chat. Okay, so, but on a more serious note, you are now the president of the Global Workspace Association, which is GWA for short, and I should mention, anything we talk about today will be in the show notes at everythingcoworking.com. Click on podcast, and then you'll see Scott's interview there. So anything we talk about, like GWA, and anything we talk about going forward, we'll include those links or notes in the show notes so you can reference them later. So tell us about GWA, who else is on the leadership team, and a little bit about the organization's goals.
So the Global Workspace Association is the international trade association for the workspace as a service industry. And its roots come in, you know, mostly representing office business centers, the brick and mortar version of space that's chopped up into a lot of private space with meeting rooms and shared lobbies and shared infrastructure. But that's, you know, that's sort of looking backwards at sort of what it was and what its current, you know, state is it's sort of an industry association in transition. And what I mean by transition is, if we look at the workspace as a service industry and we look at where the disruptive changes and the growth and the excitement is, it's really coming mostly from the co-working vertical, and the incredible splash that grassroots quote movement has made in the workspace, you know, industry, and now how they're reaching sort of what I call that first level of maturing. And we're seeing some, you know, incredible business leaders like yourself, Jamie, and the Jeremy Nooners of the world, and Bill Jacobsons, and many others, you know, many other names of people I've run across, Alex Hillman, on and on, that are really bringing a sense of credibility, professionalism, and profitability, you know, all of those combinations, all necessary to the co-working space. And with that, you know, I personally have seen the business center world and the co-working world coming closer together as opposed to going further apart. When they first started, there was this perception by, I think, quite a few people that co-working was very different. And I still respect people that feel that way because there are significant differences. Don't get me wrong here. But I do believe that actually there are quite a few more similarities when we look at them from a business perspective, of what the overall mission of providing, you know, a community shared environment is about, even if they look and feel slightly different physically and operate slightly different with respect to what goes on in the inner workings. If we look at it, you know, from sort of what I think is that 30,000 foot view, there's a lot of similarities. So, you know, the GWA is a trade association that has a nice annual conference this year. It'll be in October 20th to the 23rd in Denver, Colorado. So shameless plug on that. And, you know, obviously, we have a great lineup of speakers that are coming together, and the announcement on that will be out within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, you know, the discussion about business centers and co-working, you know, how sort of different or where they fall on the spectrum is interesting. I kind of think, I mean, the business centers did, when they first started, I remember, I mean, we've talked about this, like, you have the same challenge with co-working, which is awareness, you know, is sort of the biggest competitor, for lack of a better word. Now, a lot of people over the years have not known about the concept of sharing space, but when the business center industry started to really thrive, that was a really innovative concept. I mean, no one was doing anything like it before you started. And I think, you know, so WeWork, a lot of people would argue WeWork looks closer in structure to a business center, and that it's mostly chopped up, you know, private offices, even though some of the offices will hold, you know, 20 people. So that's a little bit different. You know, and the design is different, but they kind of dropped in a totally different world, right? It's sort of interesting to think about. Well, the business center industry started, I don't know when you would say it started, in the early 90s?
No, the business center industry started probably in the 60s and 70s.
Okay.
It started in, you know, my understanding is it was the law library. It was sort of the, you know, there was a group in LA. I forget the guy's name at the moment. Shame on me. Fijian? No. What was that? Anyway, it was to share a law library, the very expensive books that lawyers needed, you know, and instead of, you know, everybody going out and buying their own law library, they bought one law library and they would update it every month or every quarter or whenever the new books came out. And everybody would have these private offices, and all the legal assistants, paralegals and legal assistants were on the interior part of the space, and all the attorneys had the private windowed offices. And then there was the library, and then there were shared meeting rooms, and then there was, you know, and then it evolved into, oh my goodness, we have a telex machine. And then so it was a way to share expensive infrastructure and technologies. I think that's sort of how it got started. And from there, it branched off into, well, if attorneys can do this, then why can't accountants do this? And why can't, you know, an individual entrepreneur do that? Or why wouldn't a guy who lives in a community, say here in the Bay Area, and his corporate headquarters is in Chicago, and he doesn't want to work out of his home because he wants a professional environment to go to, he needs to get away from the kids, or he just prefers to work in an office environment for, dare I say, human interaction, which we now call community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how our industry got started. And a lot of growth in our industry took place in the 80s and then into the 90s using second generation space that was formerly large law offices, where they would leave one space and move on to another. And there would be these build outs of all these private offices, and landlords wouldn't want to destroy that asset.
Yeah.
And so business center operators would come in and say, oh, well, if we just build some interior privates and kind of reconfigure this, we've got ourselves a nice business opportunity with a reasonable tenant improvement allowance. So that was sort of the second wave of growth, was reusing second generation space that was originally from law firms.
That's interesting. Although, you know, I think a lot of people would say the difference between business centers and co-working space, I mean, certainly the mix of workspace, and then co-working spaces focus a lot on community. But I'm picturing that first shared law space, and I'm thinking, you know, it's an example of a niche sort of co-working space where you've got people all doing the same thing and sharing resources. And I'm guessing that there was also a lot of sharing, hey, you know, how do you contract for this? Or, you know, what do you charge for this? Or how do you handle this type of client going on?
You know, if you have a personal injury attorney that all of a sudden, you know, as part of a personal injury runs into an accounting, you know, law mess, you know, with his client, and he goes across the hall and talks to the tax lawyer while he's dealing with a PI case. And next thing you know, somebody's got, you know, committed a crime. Kind of an extended example of, yeah, they would knowledge share, and they would network, they want to talk law. They all went to law school. Where'd you go to law school? I don't know. Right. Where'd you go to law school? Let's tell stories about law school. And then, well, and that would lead to, oh, you went to law school in Chicago. I love Chicago. I actually grew up there. Oh, you know, and so absolutely, you know, it was the ability to get out and have human interaction for social stimulation and to feel better about oneself while, you know, eventually you had to go back and write the brief and prepare for the trial or whatever it is your actual task was that you did. You know, we all look for a little bit of something more satisfying along the way as we have an environment to accomplish our work.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. And now, you know, you've got community co-working spaces dropping in, and like the WeWorks all leveraging, I mean, this totally different mindset than was going on in the 80s and 90s. I mean, that was so early, and now it's like second nature to people to share, and community building and social media. And it's just, it just makes sense that it's a little bit of a different world now. But okay, so we will.
Just quickly. Yeah. Let me interject that the analogy you're using between WeWork today and co-working is very similar to the one that happened in 1993 or 4, I forget exactly, somewhere in the early 90s with Regis and our in the traditional business center model. You know, Regis came to North America from Europe and opened their first center in Redwood Shores, California. I had the closest center to them in San Mateo. And it was mind-boggling. Within about 6 months, you know, the first couple of weeks, you're frustrated and you're upset. You've got this big competitor and you feel like you're going to go out of business. And what you quickly realize is that the marketing and the awareness that they brought and the validation that they brought to the space, to the concept of shared space, ended up making me and I think this industry significantly more dollars than it has ever costed. And I believe WeWork brings the same validation, and there's a lot of crazy conversations going around their valuation and their business plan and their desire to build a community and have that be worth something greater than their individual parts from the real estate perspective. And there's certainly some inherent risk in their approach, and you know, where all of us are watching anxiously to see how that story unfolds. But you know, many same skeptics said the same thing about Regis, and candidly, Regis went through a bankruptcy in 2001 when the economy imploded. And guess what? We're here in 2015. They're publicly traded and doing better than ever, and have I don't know how many thousands of locations. So I think while there might be some skeptics to WeWork, I think people should really keep their eyes open and realize this is just considerable validation to everything that the entrepreneurs have been doing in the space.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And I think, right, they're enabling a lot of fundraising that wouldn't be happening otherwise, and a lot of awareness that would take a lot more years. So
absolutely.
It's going to be a fun next 5 or 10 years. So speaking of co-working and business centers, and so GWA recently launched a roadshow with Alex Hillman and Adam Tetris, who are from Indy Hall in Philadelphia. And you're doing, so I think I might be missing a couple cities here, but New York, Philly, San Francisco, Chicago, Miami. What did I miss?
Boston is where it started.
Boston, okay.
With Bill Jacobson.
Awesome, at Work Bar.
And D.C.
Oh, in D.C., okay. And so the title of the event is Smash the Stereotypes on Shared Workspaces and Modern Workers. Tell us, I know you've been to a couple of the sessions. How are the sessions going? What are the major takeaways for the audience?
So the sessions are going really well. I had the privilege to fly back east and attend the New York City and D.C. events. And, there was mostly Business Center people in there, but there were a couple of co-working people in there. And I think, you know, Alex and Adam do a phenomenal job about getting up and telling the story about really how to build a community and what that means in a lot from so many different angles. Alex's story, for those of you that know him or don't know him, I got a chance to know him a little bit. It's pretty fascinating. He's a software programmer that then became, you know, the desire for community, and that led him to opening this space in Indy Hall, and then he built his community, and he's built an online community, and now he's more interested in going out and touring and training and teaching and talking than he is about writing code. So it kind of speaks to the the evolution on it. But, you know, a lot of what they, you know, what they talk about was sort of, you know, all the way from the first introduction that you might have with a prospect, whether it's, you know, a member or a client, and engaging in that relationship right off the bat, instead of starting to sell and say, you know, this office is $500 or this desk is $300, you know, sort of engaging in conversation with them. Where are you coming from? You know, whether it's a place or a time or a location or a meeting, just where are you coming from? And allowing that conversation to get started and finding out whether or not it's a mutual fit. And not all flavors are for all people, and to avoid the desperation that everybody's gonna, you know, needs one flavor. There's a lot of different flavors out there in this workspace as a service, whether someone might come to one of my business centers and really be a better fit for Jamie, your co-working space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's important that all of us feel that out and on both sides of the ledger, whether you're running co-working or a business center. And so you know, the relationship starts before you start to sell, and with that, I think that's the change in the consumer's mind. Sort of, they want to buy from someone they trust, and you've got to do that. The other thing they talked about was choice architecture, and I think that dovetails into one of the great changes that's taking place in business centers is this concept of embracing open space. Our legacy has been a lot of private offices, meeting rooms, a lobby, and dare I say, a kitchen. We long ago have started to call it a lounge. But ultimately, you know, with choice architecture, what you realize is whether you're a defense attorney or an entrepreneur, a solopreneur, you're looking for a different type of space at different times of the day or different times of the week to work. And that may be wanting to sit in a lounge type environment with the TV on in the background and your headset on and surrounded by a few people and not communicating, but not being holed up in a private office. Or it may be, you know, to be in a private office. I think the thing that I've enjoyed witnessing is that many co-working spaces have added private office.
Mm-hmm.
Realize that, guess what? They're easier to rent. They're easier to monetize. People want them. But what we've found is the sweet spot in our evolution of Pacific workplaces is we're starting to find the sweet spot is to have that nice mix of open space and private offices. In our Sunnyvale location, we recently did a remodel, and we took out windowed offices. If you can imagine, our industry would have never thought about taking down a windowed office to make open space. Oh, those are where you get your money from. And in some respects, that's true. I don't want to diminish the fact that a window office is a valuable commodity. But to take a portion of the space and create a social area that can also be used to sell co-working type memberships in an environment that someone may feel comfortable in your particular physical location, your particular community that you've built, I think that's what we're seeing is sort of the two coming closer together. Again, you know, I respect the differences and that they're never going to be truly the same, and that's kind of a good thing. But we are seeing that, you know, the lounge and the open space moving towards the entrance to the space. I'd like to call it the lobby, but really it's the entrance to the space, because lobbies are changing their looks. Typically, you're not having as many people sitting at a front desk as you used to. That's getting to be kind of an old school thing. So it's the Adam and Alex Roadshow has sort of just kind of gotten everybody's thinking going that, you know, there's new ways to do things, whether you're selling to attorneys or to executives or to entrepreneurs. people want more out of their workspace. They want social interaction, and that's what I'm trying to bring to the Business Center constituents from a training standpoint. And they're doing a great job, and I'm excited to announce that they will be in San Francisco next Tuesday, and then Chicago Thursday and Miami on Friday. So another shameless plug. Thanks, Jamie.
We love it. Make sure everybody knows about those. Yeah, I think, you know, I love the phrase choice architecture. And it's funny because I talk about this stuff a lot and I have not heard that term. And I'm going to steal it from now on.
You can steal it. I stole it from Alex and Adam, and I have to put my proper copyright infringement disclosure out there that that was not mine, but it was one in my notes that I took because it resonated with me. I like the way that a creation of physical space for different type of work, different type of moods, the creation of neighborhoods.
Yeah, I will. You know, and I've heard the terminology around that a lot. I spoke at WorkTech New York a couple weeks ago, and everybody was talking about activity-based work, which is essentially what you're talking about, but choice architecture is much sexier. So I'll let Alex know that I'm going to borrow that. And Alex has his own podcast, The Coworking Weekly Show, so you should check that out as well. But yeah, this idea, so one of the other things that came up at WorkTech, this concept of, you know, how people work at home, which is, you know, you either sit on the couch or you stand at your counter or you sit at your desk in your office, depending on what mood you're in. And, you know, sort of this idea of how do you bring more home to work? So, you know, people are really comfortable at home and sort of have it set up how they best like it. And so how do you bring those choices into the workplace? And I think so it sounds like you guys had some really relevant discussions and everyone's trying to figure that out. Business centers, co-working spaces, corporations, even at the more macro scale of buildings. Like when you talk about shared space versus private space, I hear real estate folks talk about redesigning buildings to accomplish some of those things because people want that just not on the micro, like what's in my own office space level, but on a bigger, like how's the whole building used? So
yeah, you've probably read about, I think it was a lobby in a building in Chicago that's being completely renovated, and they're, as part of the amenity of the building, they're putting a co-working space in. Now, I imagine you, I would imagine you, and I certainly myself, I'm a little skeptical about just, you know, building it and they will come. I hope that they understand it's more to it than that. And I think that's, you know, one of the great takeaways of the last couple of years is it's an awful lot about the people. The physical architecture is important, but if you just put up some cool chairs and some cool tables and throw some TVs on the wall and a cool coffee bar in the corner, and that's the extent of what you think is your communal co-working space in the building, you might have a couple of people crash in there from time to time, but you're not going to get out of it what you're going to do the investment of space a disservice by not properly staffing it and putting a program together to create the community and the excitement and the networking and all the other things that we know people are looking for in that type of environment.
Yeah, and Alex, I mean, that's a lot of what Alex and Adam talk about is community building and how that's really the core of what helps a co-working space succeed. So yeah, you could call a lobby you could call that an amenity, but not, you know, not really co-working. And I think if that's something you want to achieve, I do a little consulting work with real estate folks, and that's what I help them with, is understanding what does that look like and how do you manage that from an ROI perspective from the building? Because when you start talking about adding community managers to really make that successful, it's just a different way of thinking. So things are changing.
One of the things you and I talked about as far as community managers was the renaming of our staff at Pacific Workplaces, and how we used to have center managers and receptionists, and now we have community managers and community coordinators. And it's one tiny piece of a large shift in not reinventing, but having a company evolve that's been around as long as ours. I mean, we were founded in 2003, so we're what, 12 years old now. And, you know, early last year, we rebranded from Pacific Business Centers to Pacific Workplaces. And we wanted to have the name encompass that we could put different types of physical space within the family of companies. Yeah. And, you know, obviously you and I have, you know, engaged in a partnership that you take care of in Palo Alto with Enerspace, which has been a phenomenal experience for all of us. But we did, you know, Pacific Business Centers was just, it just was that. It was a business center. And we want we want to become so much more as we evolve into the future. Same with our staff, because yes, we renamed the company. Okay, great. But are you, you know, that's like, are you walking the walk or just talking the talk? Well, so, you know, the next step was, why don't we start to call them what we'd like them to do, which is start to focus more on the community within their space. And then the next step is, well, what does that really mean? Well, we're all still learning, so let's get the likes of Alex and Adam to come out and talk to us, and let's do some research of our clients, which we're now evolving to call members. They don't even know they're called members yet, so I find that a still huge work in process. But it's kind of letting everybody know that we're sort of shifting what we're finding. We're placing a higher value on the relationships and the intrinsic satisfaction out of human interaction and networking and socialization that we provide in our spaces, other than just, you know, the fact that we have an eighth floor corner view that you can, you know, look at Mount Diablo and it's gorgeous. We want you to come out of that door and realize there's so much more within that environment. And so far we're off to a medium start. There's still an awful lot to teach, an awful lot to learn, but the transition is actually quite fun.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing a cultural shift, which is a major undertaking for anyone. And you're changing the language that you use, which helps people think differently about how they do their job and how they interact with members instead of clients, and the types of interactions they have with them. And that's a slow, that's change management. It'll take time, but yeah, hats off. I mean, I think you guys are just totally get it and are making those changes at the right time and evolving how you're thinking about your spaces and your staff and your brand, and you're on it.
It's exciting. It's fun.
Yeah. So speaking of shift, so GWA is historically, back kind of flipping back to talking about GWA, historically been more business center focused. It's been kind of your membership and who shows up to your conferences. We've started to get folks like Bill Jacobson from Work Bar on the board, and Mark Gilbreth, who's not specifically co-working by any means, but sort of much broader, you know, sort of work anywhere kind of guy. You host panels on co-working at your conferences, and you're doing this series with Alex and Adam. So how is GWA looking at co-working as being part of the workspace family?
Well, I'll now wear my GWA president hat. As the president of the Global Workspace Association, I see co-working as the future. It does not mean that business centers in their current form go away or die or going to disappear. People need private space. There are certain types of work that needs to be done in private environments. I believe that a pure business center that you might have seen a few years ago will eventually evolve into a slightly different architecture, and some will mature more with their communities. But when you look at the change in demographics of the incoming workforce, and I think, what did we hear, 40% of the workforce will be solopreneur, entrepreneur, people that can decide where and when and how they work by what, 2025, I think 40% of the workforce, something like that. If you don't acknowledge that, you know, industries change and that, you know, associations need to change and groups need to change, then you become you'll die and become irrelevant. So as president, I view co-working as the future. Now, everything takes time, and it takes work. It takes work to build the relationships. It takes work to learn the knowledge. But having the likes of a Mark Gilbreth who just touches every bit of it, very inspiring person, very charismatic, very forward thought leader, out there talking to everybody, and, you know, all the way from the Jones Lang LaSalle's to the small co-working in Soho in New York City. You know, he's got his finger on the pulse as much as any single individual or company can. It's pretty amazing. So, you know, we have him on the board, and we have, you know, Bill Jacobson, who brought us Alex and Adam. You know, they're the leadership on the board, and you know, we're going to be looking to others as the elections come up in the fall for a couple of new board seats, and it's an embracing of a new vertical in an industry that's been around for a while, and realizing that vertical not only needs representation, but needs to be part of the leadership and eventually part of the overall message, and to me, in a pretty significant way. While not discounting that, you know, you have a legacy that you're bringing along, a very successful legacy, I'd like to point out, you know, one that's been going on for 20, 30 years and deserves to be. But, you know, my concern is with where we sit in time right now, and my responsibility as the president of the association is, I feel this cool sense of responsibility to help guide it, maybe start taking a slight right-hand turn with it. So that's my take on that.
Everybody's forward-looking right now. I keep saying this, but I think it's just a really exciting time in workspace. And for those of us who kind of geek out about being a part of it, it's a challenge. You have that huge challenge in your role of COO at Pacific Workspaces.
Places.
Workplaces. Yikes. I'm getting the GW. Yes. Getting this confused. COO of Pacific Workplaces and then the Global Workspace Association. You've signed up for a couple of challenges on driving those kind of into a shifting landscape. So
it's a good thing the Giants play every day. So
totally.
I have a three-hour right. statistical soap opera distraction to help keep my brain focused on the task at hand.
Yeah. So shameless plug for the GWA conference again, but it's coming up in October. What are you most looking forward to about the conference?
You know, what I really look forward to is we put together a good group of speakers that talk about the future and it'll have some conversations around choice architecture. It's going to have some conversations around community. It's going to have some conversations around co-working. But we've always been, you know, the GWA has always worked really hard to put together a great quality program of inspirational, motivational speakers on the workspaces service industry. It's an event every year that I'm always so impressed with the new relationships that I've made. I mean, our CEO, Laurent Deland, is also CEO of CloudVO. I met him in 2001 at, you know, what was then the Office Business Center Association, a big mouthful there. But it's so the relationships are real. I mean, Jamie, I met you at the Juicy Conference. I mean, it's about networking and turning networking into relationships and relationships into business partnerships and friendships. So I look forward to all of it. I really get a nice large business takeaway that I can monetize in real dollars. I can monetize in intrinsic satisfaction with relationships. And then candidly, you know, we throw a nice party and we also have a good time on a couple of the evening programs. And so it's, you know, it's 2.5 days of studying hard, thinking hard, working hard and playing hard. You go home exhausted. And the next week you kind of just feel totally refreshed and invigorated and have lots of new contacts of people that you want to keep in touch with and start following on Twitter and Facebook. And of course now with social media, these relationships feel like they stay so much more alive than they did pre-social media. I mean, I look at, you know, I told you earlier, I have two teenage daughters and I look at the relationships and they're leaving, you know, one of them's leaving high school this week and graduating. And it's so different from when we left high school, it was kind of like goodbye. Here's my phone number. Yeah. Okay. That, you know, that didn't last very long. And that was it. You know, it took a while. And I went to my high school reunion last year, my 30th, yes, I'm dating myself. But the entire event, everyone that was at that event, you know, with the exception of maybe a small handful of people, were active on Facebook because the people that organized it chose Facebook as the venue of choice to promote the event. Now, you could go find your friends if you didn't think they were on Facebook. But it was interesting is that the group of people that came together were kind of the professional social people that were out looking to maintain relationships and stay engaged that way. And to me, it was a real powerful symbol of social media, a class of 1984 getting together. And, you know, we were a class of 400 and I think we had 150 that made it. And those that didn't, I just think didn't know about it. And that's their choice. That's fine. That's a concerted choice one makes to not be involved in those types of things. But anyway, going back to the conference and the takeaway is with social media now, the relationships and the interaction and the networking and the communication flow now is so much easier and so much more powerful. So it just makes getting together in person that much more valuable because to me, you can then extend it so much easier.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think people struggle with planning to attend conferences because of the expense involved. But I think, and they think, oh, I can meet people on Twitter, or, you know, Facebook or whatever, but it's totally different. I think that's what you're saying. If you create those relationships, you might start it over Twitter, but you really establish those connections when you meet people in person. And it's so important. And then the social media is the tool that helps you maintain those relationships until you can see the person, you know, next year at the conference. But you just get so much out of seeing people in person, and things happen like you and I meeting. We never would have gotten to where we are today, you know, through a Twitter relationship. We went to a conference and, you know, we stayed out late and made it to the sessions early in the morning, and then you make things happen. So
you come back, you shake the tree, and you decide, hey, there might be a business opportunity here.
Exactly.
And you go into a room and you see if there is one, and lo and behold, success. So
yeah. So this is a little bit of a pivot in the questions, but while I have you on, and we might have to just do another session on this, but so one of the topics that always comes up at conferences, we were both at Juicy at the beginning of May, the Global Coworking Unconference Conference. And one of the topics is always around marketing, and the coworking folks, because they're so passionate about community, often get really focused on building a community as a marketing tool, which I think is true. But as spaces start to scale, it's hard to sort of build a really big community and then kind of get your space up and running. I think there are other, I think bigger successful spaces are starting to develop marketing budgets. And I know that's one of the things that Pacific Workplaces does really well. And you've had a lot of years experimenting. What are the, if you were to give some advice, maybe instead of asking exactly what you do, so I won't ask you to spill all your beans, but if you were to give advice to co-working spaces that are kind of looking to grow and scale, what advice would you give them around marketing?
It's a great question. Given that we are a portfolio of companies that can operate as one, we do have some muscle out playing with Google with respect to budgets and the human capital that goes behind making those dollars spent effectively. Because the consumer that we're looking for, whether it's, you know, the member or the client, however we want to define them in this moment, they're engaged through the web, and you know we're looking at 90-95% of our people are coming through the web. So, you know, I say this such that, you know, probably there's probably some value in the network. And that may be easier said than done, but, you know, some of the harder things are where great value is created. And that is finding ways to raise multiple boats with, you know, pooled budgets and things like that. I actually, you may or may not know this, Jamie, given that we do work together on some stuff. Of everything in Pacific Workplaces, marketing is something that is directed by our marketing team and headed by Laurent and Keith and his team, their team. So I am far from the marketing expert mind, but I do know that the pooling of resources is something I think that we find valuable. And I think if we were suddenly a one location company, we would be challenged to go it alone. And I would be looking for ways to pool resources, you know, whether it's channel, you know, whether it's the creation of channel partners or the creation of pooling. I know Bill Jacobson in Boston has a network set up where he's downtown and they have some suburban locations that are part of his, I think he's created kind of this Boston, greater Boston network. I don't know exactly how it works. You would need to ask him the details, but it's kind of fantastic. If you're out in the suburbs and you want to go downtown and you've got a meeting there, or you want to just work downtown because maybe you're going to go to the Red Sox game on a, you know, on an evening and you want to work and beat traffic or whatever, they have reciprocal usages, and I'm sure those reciprocal usages probably have some dovetailing of marketing that creates greater value than any one of those businesses could create on their own. And so I think that would be my advice, is to, you know, look to the value of networks. I know that actually Laurent with CloudVO is giving a webinar in July on the power of networks, and that's something I would encourage people to look up through the Global Workspace Association. He's going to be volunteering his time to put together. And Laurent is, you know, he's a very, very well thought, forward thinking individual, as you're well aware. And I'm sure it'll be a fascinating presentation. And I would think that not just business center operators, but co-working operators as well would find it quite valuable. And it's free to attend. So it's a non-paid event and something just sort of web learning.
Yeah, I will put a link to that in the show notes as well, and a link to GWA. And I think, I mean, that's one of the things I've learned about being involved with Pacific Workplaces. You know, you do have scale, but you're operating, you know, as a company, and I think there are things that business centers And companies like yours that you do, that co-working spaces can certainly learn from, because in many cases you have examples of scale that that a lot of co-working spaces have not gotten to yet, and how you manage, you know, marketing and customer service and staff training and things like that, I think can be really valuable. So I'm glad you mentioned the webinar. I'm excited to be able to share that.
Absolutely, and happy to get together with you on another podcast at some point where we redefine some of the other things that you and I could talk about.
Awesome. Yes, I have a long list of those as we've chatted about. So, okay, so let's leave with, where can we find you, and or I'm just thinking you have a lot of online presence. So personal stuff, Pacific Workplaces,
well, the
Pacific GWA,
Workplaces,
so whatever you want to share.
PacificWorkplaces.com is a website for our company, but you know that's not what our audience hopefully is looking for. The GlobalWorkspace.org is the trade association that I'm the president of, and you know, we bring tremendous value of education and networking to the workspace as a service industry. We have a vow to embrace, learn from, and try and add value to the co-working vertical as they become an incredibly relevant industry that we all feel like we're all part of the same industry. So that's sort of my takeaway is find us on that website and look for our local member networks with Alex and Adam this year. We've got the conference in Denver, and we have some webinars. One, like I said, one in July coming up with Laurent from CloudVO. That's it.
All right. I love it. Good. Well, this was a great conversation, and we'll share the notes and we'll get back on to chat some more. But thanks for sharing your thoughts. Really appreciate it.
Jamie, thank you for having me. I always enjoy talking workspace with you and community with you and all this. And this was valuable for me as well. So I really appreciate the time we got to spend together today.
Awesome. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.